From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, 2018 could be the year the Democrats regain control of the state Senate. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on the newly passed federal tax overhaul plan in Congress and its blue state impact. And nine people are arrested during a pro-Dreamer demonstration in front of Republican Congressman Faso's office. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. ...2018 might finally be the year that Democrats regain control of the state Senate. But as the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports, they face a number of obstacles, and Republicans aren't ready to give up anytime soon.
Two feuding factions of Democrats in the state Senate have agreed to reunite later in 2018 and perhaps rule the chamber, but it can happen only if a number of events occur first. Governor Cuomo, under pressure from left-leaning Democrats to be a peace broker, in November called on the eight breakaway members of the Independent Democratic Conference to rejoin with the rest of the Democrats.
I urge both sides to stop their intramural disputes and unify because we have real issues.
But when the session formally begins on January 3rd, Democrats will fall two seats short of the 32 members they would need to control the chamber. Two senators were elected to new positions in November, and their seats will be vacant. Cuomo says he'll call special elections for those seats, which are in staunchly Democratic districts, but not until after the budget is completed, perhaps sometime in the spring.
Because you need to get a budget done also, right? And some would argue politicizing the budget isn't the best idea. But it's a decision that we have to make next year in January, and we will.
Even if Democrats win those elections, they would still not automatically be in the majority. One lone Democrat, Senator Simcha Felder, caucuses with the 31 Republicans. That gives them their 32-seat edge. Felder, who represents the traditionally conservative Orthodox Jewish community in Brooklyn, would need to be convinced to meet with the Democrats instead. Felder has not yet said what he might do. Mainstream Democratic senators say with all of those variables, even if the Democrats do all unite in the closing weeks of the 2018 legislative session, it's not likely they will immediately accomplish an agenda that they've been proposing for years. Senator Liz Krueger, who's the ranking Democrat on the Finance Committee, says issues like women's reproductive rights, campaign finance reform, and transgender rights might have to be on hold for another year.
We will only have a few weeks, or maybe 5 weeks, when we are officially the majority. So no one should imagine we will turn around the state legislature and pass every bill we've been hoping to pass in our first 5 weeks. That's a ridiculous set of assumptions.
Democrats in the Senate hope to pick up seats in the 2018 elections. They're encouraged by 2017 Democratic wins in the county executive seats in Westchester and Nassau counties, where they believe some Republican Senate incumbents are vulnerable. Krueger says if the Democrats gain seats, a number of bills stalled in the state Senate for years and supported in the Democratic-led state assembly may finally become law. Republicans, though, say they aren't going anywhere. They say they plan to increase their numbers next November and hang on to the Senate. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
You're listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustino.
Joining us now is Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Well, obviously the big news of the week, it came out of Washington. Passage of the federal tax plan, which targets states like New York. The governor, of course, been repeating phrases all along like it's going to be devastating, a dagger in the heart of the state. He threatened to take action against what he says is the bizarre double taxation resulting from the new law. Speaking on Wednesday this week, Alan, just before the final vote, Cuomo threatened the state's GOP congressional representatives, which we've heard before, who voted for the measure.
Well, you know, he thinks that he can excite people, and he may, by defeating and going after people like Elise Stefanik and John Faso and others, and defeating them in their home districts, Claudia Tenney. He may get away with that. And, you know, as we have said before in our commentaries, the numbers for the Republicans right now are dismal. Huge national polls are showing that people want Democrats. And that may spell some real defeat for some of the Republican candidates. Look, we have both John Faso and Elise Stefanik in real trouble up here because there may be massive shifts within their districts. You don't need massive as much as you need 5%. You get a low difference in a turnout that was unexpected, and you could have a wipeout here. And Cuomo, of course, would be in a position to take the credit for that. Now, Stefanik is interesting in that she's up there in a fairly safe district in the North Country, but she votes no on that tax bill. And I'm sure that her leadership led her because they want to save her seat. Same thing with Faso. Now, in Stefanik's case, she goes into a large explanation of why the Americans need a tax cut, even though she voted no against it. And also, she says that it's all Andrew Cuomo's fault. Because he has overtaxed New York State. And here's a governor who came on as a sort of fiscal conservative in the beginning, I suspect sensing this was all going to happen, and is now going to have to be in a position of saying, no, I didn't do it.
One of the looming problems facing New York, in addition to the impact of the tax cut, is the budget. We're $4.3 billion in debt, and according to the state controller, now we also have Wall Street, but that's different from the economy in New York.
That's right. Now, look, David, it is not permissible for state governments to run deficits. You can't. You know, the United States government can print money and do in order to get out of their troubles and to borrow in the case of this enormous, terrible tax plan. One from the Republicans, who are deficit hawks, of course, $1.5 trillion debt. That's absurd. And these are the very hypocritical guys and women who are saying all along, hey, we can't borrow money. We can't do that. We're against it. And yet they do it. They do it. And so, the state is in a situation where they are behind the eight ball, and it's going to get worse because of this tax bill. What Cuomo does about that, I don't know, but it's one more of his substantial troubles on his way to reelection.
Alan, the issue of 2020. We know in New York that Governor Andrew Cuomo and the mayor, Bill de Blasio, both rumored looking like they're moving toward a strategy of running for president of the United States. Add a third at this point, and there's been discussion about this now, Kirsten Gillibrand.
Well, that's right. We see Kirsten Gillibrand really gearing up. So feminist issues are her strength, and she is going to go with it to the point where she's alienating certain Democrats because she's been a big beneficiary of the Clinton largesse over the years. And now she says in a stunning statement that Bill Clinton should have resigned over the Monica Lewinsky thing when it happened. This is seen by some Democrats who are fiercely pro-Hillary as perfidy. And yet, she has struck out on her own way, and we will see how that lands with her. Now, we know that Andrew Cuomo, sensing, I suspect, that de Blasio was going to be a big opponent, and de Blasio has confirmed that by, A, taking on Cuomo around New York State, but also running himself for president of the United States, All the traditional signs are there. He's out in Iowa. He's everywhere else that you're going to be if you're going to be a presidential candidate. And he is going to try to carve out the left of the Democratic Party and say that he should be their candidate. So for Cuomo to react the way that he has to de Blasio is no surprise. But what does he do now with Gillibrand? If he attacks her, he looks like a bully. And many people already think he is. So he's got a rough one there. And Gillibrand is coming up in the polls. At one point, she was 1%. I saw her in the 20s the other day. Look, she's going to put herself forward. That's what you do in politics. And I'm fascinated to see what Andrew Cuomo does to blunt that one.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, a Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays to all our Legislative Gazette listeners. We'll catch up with everybody next week, just before the new year.
And Merry Christmas to you, David, and to all our wonderful listeners.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. 9 people were arrested this week during a pro-Dreamer demonstration at Republican Congressman John Faso's office. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports.
On Monday, activists occupied 19th District Republican Congressman John Faso's Kinderhook office, demanding that he withhold his budget vote in exchange for passing what they call a Clean Dream Act. Dreamers are defined as undocumented immigrants who were brought to the U.S. as children. The Dream Act extends protections to law-abiding students and workers. Protesters had been on the scene all day long, but overstayed their welcome when they staged a sit-in, refusing to leave the premises at 5 p.m. closing time.
Say loud, say clear, refugees are welcome here.
Say loud, say clear, dreamers are welcome here.
Co-founder of the Columbia County Sanctuary Movement, Gloria Martinez, says arrests began around 6 p.m. One demonstrator had to be carried out of the building.
We were just processed. We were given an appearance ticket, so we have to go back to court in February.
Columbia County Sanctuary Movement member Jennifer Benn says there were 9 arrests altogether. Ben says she and 3 other protesters were arrested by state police early in the afternoon, charged with violating the local building occupancy code.
Yes, it's a public building, and they do encourage constituents to come in, express their concerns, and, you know, stuff like that. There was a lot of questions about the number of occupancy that can occupy the waiting area. It's a pretty large room.
Ben insists there were enough chairs in the room to accommodate those gathered. Columbia County Sheriff's deputies handled 5 evening arrests. According to a release issued by the sheriff's office, 4 individuals taken into custody are local residents of Columbia County, and a 5th individual is a resident of Kingston. The 5 protesters arrested were each charged with 1 count of trespass, which is a violation. Appearance tickets were issued returnable to the Village of Kinderhook Court on February 5th. For his part, Faso says he supports Dreamers, with a caveat.
Well, I support taking care of the DACA problem and the DACA issue, but it has to be done in conjunction with enhanced security measures, so that we don't have to deal with this issue in the future. So I'm a co-sponsor of a bill to deal with the DACA issue. I also lament the fact that we're not getting it done before the first of the year. But I anticipate that this will be one of the first items of business in 2018.
Faso told WAMC that the notion that the House or Senate will pass a DREAM Act bill that doesn't contain border wall and security funding is not possible. Again, Gloria Martinez.
He keeps talking about compromising and trying to negotiate when it comes to the money that's going to go towards increased ICE activity in our communities, the border wall, militarization of the border. And we already took a stance yesterday, and other people around the United States have taken a stance saying, no, that is not acceptable. And our stance with FASO is to step up and just vote for the Clean Dream Act. I mean, the Clean Dream Act needs 218 votes to pass, where it's over 200 already. If he just steps up and puts his foot down and just co-sponsors it and vote for it, then we're just another less vote away from what is needed for it to pass.
Jennifer Benfield's Monday's action made its intended mark. As for the future?
We don't have another event on the table. We will decide that as a group as to what would be our next step in action and how we're going to get there.
Thousands have mobilized on the issue in recent weeks, organizing more than 30 sit-ins and rallies across the country. FASO, along with 33 other Republicans, signed a letter sent to Speaker Paul Ryan requesting a resolution for Dreamers before the year's end.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Federal agencies are weighing in on how a new designation recently issued for the Sturgeon Habitat near Indian Point impacts the Westchester nuclear power plant that is set to close by 2021. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission.
In August, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration Fisheries designated critical habitat for the endangered Atlantic sturgeon from Maine to Florida. The portion of the Hudson River affected by Buchanan-based Indian Point is included in one of the five critical habitats, the New York Bight. With this declaration, NRC staff consulted with NOAA Fisheries regarding impacts from the plant's continued operation on the Atlantic sturgeon. NRC spokesman Neil Sheehan says his agency, the National Marine Fisheries Service, and Indian Point's parent company, Entergy, held a meeting in October.
And there were some concrete actions to come out of that. And so now we have written, based on everything that we learned at that meeting, we've written to the National Marine Fisheries Service saying we would like your formal take that there won't be an adverse impact. But based on what we're seeing so far and the additional steps that the company has committed to, that we believe that the plant will not have an adverse impact for the remaining operational life.
Sheehan says given the endangered species and critical habitat designation, it was incumbent upon the NRC to consider the effects the plant could have on the Atlantic sturgeon until it closes. He says National Marine Fisheries Service is the controlling agency in this matter, and the NRC awaits its determination. Julie Crocker is acting assistant regional administrator in the Protected Resources Division of the National Marine Fisheries Service. She says that in August, her agency responded to a request from the NRC to consider effects of continued operation of Indian Point on the proposed critical habitat designation, saying it was not likely to adversely affect the proposed critical habitat. Now that the critical habitat designation is in place, Crocker says the NRC has asked that NMFS confirm that this conclusion is still valid. Crocker says her agency is reviewing that request and expects to have a response in early 2018. Meantime, the NRC Sheehan says Entergy has proposed additional monitoring.
One of the things they're doing is they're going to be monitoring the intakes of the plant even more closely. They're going to bring in a consultant who will do periodic checks to look for any evidence of The Atlantic sturgeon being harmed by the remaining operational life of the plan. And so we think with those checks in place that there's a good outcome to this issue.
This proposed sturgeon monitoring would be at the plant's water intakes on the Hudson and occur 2 to 3 days a week during April and May, and again during September and October. Spokesman Jerry Nappe says Entergy is working with state and federal agencies to finalize a monitoring plan for Atlantic sturgeon. Manajo Green is Environmental Action Director of nonprofit Hudson River Sloop Clearwater, whose mission is to preserve and protect the Hudson.
Monitoring is a good first step, but if the National Marine Fisheries Service can recommend an even more protective action, that would be very valuable, because both the Atlantic and the short-nosed sturgeon are endangered, and 13 of the signature Hudson River fish are still in decline.
She adds,
Indian Point takes 2.5 billion gallons a day for its cooling system, its once-through cooling system.
Intakes that Green says increase the chances of fish kills. Nappe says Indian Point operations are fully protective of the Hudson River ecosystem.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. As for program number 1751. Or just listen or podcast on the web at WAMC.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina. Happy holidays.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.